Welcome to Built to Go, a van life podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Wagg, coming to you from the College of Curiosity. This time it's episode 215, and we're going to talk about some lessons from trailer life. Have you considered maybe not doing a van and doing a trailer instead? Well, let me give you the pros and cons of that idea. We're also going to talk about a way to fix those aging window seals you have without removing the entire window, a product review of a very inexpensive and small toilet, and a tale from the road involving a stolen tractor. Well, that I actually stole. But anyway, welcome back. Thanks so much for tuning in today. Happy to be here with you. And I just got back from a lot of driving. I recently drove to Denver and then to Gardner, Colorado for the Rocky Mountain Star Stair, an event I try to attend every year. And this is in a dark sky site in basically the middle of Colorado with very few people around, but a whole bunch of stars. And we saw some really cool stuff. Most of the people who go to this really are looking for Messier objects, and they all seem to have these lists of things they want to see in their telescopes. I'm a little different. I don't really like looking through telescopes. I like just laying back and watching the Milky Way and watching all the man-made objects go by, all the space junk and satellites and things like that. And I have a little app that tells me what things is. And I don't know, for me, I just need some sort of context between what I'm looking at. And someone can, you know, talk about Arcturus and Betelgeuse and all these other stars and how they're actually more than one star and they're stacked and they're going to go supernova and all this stuff. But while I find that interesting, I find it more interesting to read about that stuff in a book than I do to actually look at it in a telescope, which I find interesting in and of itself because that just doesn't seem like me. But it is. Anyway, this year I decided that I was going to do this event, which is a camping event. You spend a whole week camping in the high desert of Colorado, in my scamp trailer rather than my van. So if you're new to the show, just be aware I have a lot of vehicles. One of them is a 2011 Sprinter Type 2 ambulance that I've, over a long period of time, converted into a camper van. But I also picked up a 13-foot 1993 Scamp fiberglass trailer. This is kind of an egg-shaped fiberglass trailer. They're very common, and they last forever, because obviously this is a 93. And I spent the last few weeks kind of fixing it up and renovating it, and I redid the electrical and the plumbing, and everything's fine. And as I talked about last week, I had a shakedown trip to take it out to Denver, and a lot of stuff happened. I actually lost some major components and things. And I will touch on that a little bit now. What I really want to talk about is what I learned about traveling with a tow vehicle and a trailer rather than just being in a van, and what those pros and cons are. Now, it is completely legit if you want to do van life in a trailer. That works, that's fine. There are no rules, but there are some certain trade-offs you'll have to do, pros and cons, and I experienced them all on this trip. So let's talk about that. First, most obvious thing is the driving part. It's harder to drive a vehicle with a trailer. That is always true. If you are towing something with your vehicle, you have to worry about things like backing up, which is much more difficult. You have to worry about making tight corners. Like with my little Scamp, which is only 13 feet long in total, that includes the tongue. It's actually only 10 feet of living space. I'm able to tow that through like a drive-through. But I also have an Airstream that's 27 feet long, and there's no way I'd be taking that through a drive-through. So the size of your tow vehicle matters, but it is definitely true that towing is always harder. Also, and I get to look forward to this, tolls are higher if you're towing a trailer. My van, being a two-axle vehicle, would have been a certain toll. In Denver, they have this very strange toll that's kind of all by itself, and they don't use the toll tags that everybody else uses. They charge, for one particular section of the road, $4.20 for a vehicle, and then $4.20 more for each additional axle. So my Scamp, being a one-axle trailer, I'll have to pay another $4.20, which is double, just because I was towing the Scamp. But if it were my Airstream, I would have had to pay an additional $8.40, because it has two axles, and I used to tow a giant fifth wheel with three axles, and obviously that would have been $12.60. So you will pay more for tolls if you're towing a trailer as well. Not a huge concern, but, you know, something to think about. Also, with driving a trailer, you should go a little bit slower. You know, everything's a little bit more ponderous. You have to take more time to plan things. You can't just whip out and go around somebody if you want to pass them. You have to be a little bit more cautious. Now, one thing people don't think about too much is tires on trailers typically can't go as fast as the tires on vans. So while your van's tires might be rated at 107 miles per hour or something like that, depending on the tires on your trailer, they might only be rated for 55. Trailers are meant to be driven slow. And for long trips, driving at 55 instead of 75 really adds up. Every hour you drive, you're 20 miles behind if you were doing 75 miles an hour. And while that will certainly help with your gas mileage, you may find yourself going significantly fewer miles in a day, which could lead to another stay somewhere, which could actually cost you more money. You have to do the math, but definitely be aware of that. Now, the thing that really caused me trouble was parking. So if I'm in my van, and my van's a Sprinter 144, it fits in a normal parking space, I don't think about parking too much. If I'm going to go into a major city, I'll think about it because I know I can't fit into a parking garage. But surface parking is no problem anywhere. Like any airport I can park at or on city streets, that's not a problem. It's totally a different thing when you're towing a trailer. So my situation was that I met my friend Susie at Meow Wolf. I talked about that last week. But I didn't have any place to park. I had the truck, which is a 2019 Ram 1500 with an 8-foot bed, fairly long truck, and the trailer. And it turns out it's illegal in Denver to park trailers on the side of the road. And if you go to a surface lot and pay to park, they don't have space for you to park your trailer. Now, most of these lots are automated. I'm sure if you could find one with an actual attendant, you could maybe rent two spaces, kind of unhook the trailer in one and then park the truck in the other. But, you know, much, much bigger pain in the butt than just parking the van. What I ended up doing, and I think this is ridiculous, is I ended up getting a hotel. I got a hotel where I knew I could park everything, and I got a place to have a shower kind of in the middle of my trip, and a place to have do the podcast and upload. When I did all the math of all the concerns I had, getting a hotel made the most sense. And yet, I can't get over the fact that, you know, this is supposed to be van life. Staying in a hotel should be the last thing that makes sense. And yet, in that particular situation, it did. Another issue with trailers is that you have to set them up. Now, my van, I pull in, I'm done. I just get in the back of the van and everything's all set up. I don't have to do anything. Trailers are a little bit different. Most of the time, you're going to have to unhook them. It depends on your situation. Sometimes you have to unhook them simply because the trailer's not level with how you have it hitched up to your truck. It should be level, but that doesn't mean it always is. So if you want it to be level back there, you have to disconnect it. And then you have to set up the stabilizers. Almost all trailers have stabilizers so they don't wiggle. And the scamp, the stabilizers, are super important because if you walk to the very back of the trailer and you don't have the stabilizers set up, the trailer will actually tip and throw the tongue in the air and throw you to the back window. Not a good situation. And then, of course, if you move to the front, it's going to slam down there too. So always put the stabilizers down. And then you're going to play the game with leveling, which we also have to do in the van. And in a way, it's actually easier in the trailer because you have the jack in the front that's going to let you level front to back pretty easily. And the side to side, you have to basically do blocks like you would in the van. But anyway, it takes time to do all this stuff. Also, because the trailer is subjected to much stronger physical forces, I talked about this last week, stuff gets thrown around back there, and I could not believe the stuff that shook loose. I talked last week about losing my holding tank, completely my fault, I did that wrong, and the stove top coming undone. Well, while I was camping in Colorado, I fixed that stuff. You know, I mean, the holding tank I didn't fix. I ended up just using a bucket. But the stove, I totally re-screwed in, used new screws, made sure it was very tight, and it still jumped out. Not only that, the screen door actually flew across the other side of the camper. I'm just amazed at the stuff that moves. This thing's a 1993. It's clearly seen some miles. And yet stuff like this is still flying off. Just think about that. When you have a trailer, it gets the stuff gets a lot more beat up than it does in a van. Now, there is a pro and con in the ability to separate the tow vehicle from the trailer. If you set the trailer up and you're happy with it, you can disconnect your tow vehicle, and boom, you just got a car or a truck or whatever you're towing with, and you can drive around anywhere and go anywhere. Once you have that parking space for your trailer established, whether it be a campground or some BLM land or whatever, That's a great thing. Now, you have to do it. It's work. But that is an advantage to trailer life, is that you can kind of separate a smaller, more comfortable tow vehicle and not have to drag everything you're living with you all the time. It's also a con. One thing that I ran into over and over and over again on this trip was it's in the van. See, I've set up my van so that I have everything I need for any situation I can imagine. Over the years, I've added little things here and there, and I haven't done that with the Scamp, and honestly, there's not enough space in the Scamp for all that stuff. Storage space is at a premium. So all the time, I was like, God, I wish I had my van where I had this or that or this or that. And if you're in a situation where you're separating the tow vehicle from the trailer, well, some of the stuff you want might be in the trailer. With the van, you always have everything all the time. And I have come to believe that that's something I really, really like. Now, a pro for the trailer is that it's much easier to work on. It's because you don't have that whole engine area, and you don't have all the exhaust and everything underneath, and there's no transmission. Much, much easier to work on. Plus, while you're working on it, let's say, I ran out of the right kind of screw. Not that I would know anything about that. You can just hop in your tow vehicle and go get it without having to drag your whole rig. When you're working on your van and something like that happens, well, you have to take the whole van. And then, you know, there might be stuff disconnected everywhere and it's a pain. So as far as working on it, I found the trailer much, much easier to work on. And then there's storage. Some trailers have a lot of storage. My Airstream actually has a lot of storage, even though Airstreams are known not to have a lot of storage. The Scamp has very little storage. All the cabinets are tiny. I mean, there's no place to put a box of cereal in that thing except on its side. And it's fine because you have that tow vehicle. And so I had this pickup truck and the Scamp, and the back of the pickup truck just became this catch-all. That's where the chairs went, that's where the trash went, that's where the empty cooler went, all that kind of stuff just got thrown in the back of the truck, and it was easy. If I had had a van, all that extra stuff would have had to have gone in the living area of the van. So there's a little bit of a trade-off there. There's less storage in the living area in my case, not in all cases. But I also had this giant 8x4-foot enclosed area in the truck that I could do whatever I wanted with. So that's something to think about. You actually travel a little different when you have a tow vehicle. You have a tow vehicle that will have storage in it, and some of that storage is what you're going to use in your trailer. Not everything's in the trailer. Whereas with a van, of course, you have to have everything with you at all the time. So what is my conclusion after doing the Scamp life? Oh, did I miss my van? I missed my van so much. I think I am a confirmed van person. But that's not going to be true for everyone. If you're someone who doesn't move around a lot, like you do just a few trips a year and then you park the trailer for a length of time, that might be a reason to do the trailer versus a van. But if you're somebody like me who spends a lot of one-nighters, like I'll spend one night here, one night here, one night there, the van is a lot more convenient. And I think going forward, I'm going to be doing the van a whole lot more than the Scamp. In fact, I have a trip to New England planned next week, and I will definitely be taking the van for that. Especially now that diesel prices are lower than gasoline in many cases. I cannot figure out gas prices. They're all over the place, but they're going down, and that is a good thing. Thank you to everybody who has supported this show at buymeacoffee.com/built-to-go. That's 2 T's, not 3, not 1. You are the reason there are no ads on this show, and we all like that. And if you would like to support the show and keep the ads away, go ahead and visit buymeacoffee.com/built-to-go and buy me a gallon of diesel, which I may use for gasoline, depending on what I'm doing. Thank you, everyone. Van Life News. few strange items this week. First, and this just came out, the new iPhone operating system is going to allow text messages even without a phone signal. Now, there's been a lot of confusion about this over the years, people not understanding how cell phones work. And until just recently, if you did not have a cell phone signal or a connection to Wi-Fi, you could not send any messages at all. Period. There just simply wasn't a way. And then iPhones of the 14 and newer models came out and could do an emergency call via satellite, which is really crazy voodoo technology. If you can take your phone outside and it has a clear view of the sky, it can communicate with a satellite and send a help, I need help message with your location and stuff. And it's free right now, which is amazing. Well, they just announced with iOS 18 that you're going to be able to send just plain old text messages without a cell phone or Wi-Fi connection over satellite. Uses the same technology as the SOS system, but basically you'll be able to say, hey, I'm on top of the mountain, everything's fine, looking forward to getting back down to camp for dinner, without any hassles, without having a separate device, and, it seems, without a really expensive data plan. What I think is going to happen, and I haven't seen any real specifics on this yet, is Apple's going to have an add-on service for satellite communications, and that will include the emergency stuff and messages, whether it be just messages or so many messages a month or whatever. Because Apple, obviously, is a company interested in making money, and there is definitely money to be made in such a service. I mean, how much would you pay to be able to stay in constant communication with everyone, no matter where you were on the earth? That could be worth quite a lot, depending on your lifestyle. So, I have a link in the show notes from the Washington Post about this. You could probably just Google it, but yeah. And of course, you know, Samsung and those guys are going to follow suit eventually, so this will come to you as well. Second thing is, this has been getting a lot of attention for some reason. Ram, the makers of the ProMaster, formerly known as Dodge, actually known as Stellantis, has issued a recall for ProMaster vans for two different things. One of the things is that the sticker on the door is wrong about the load capacity of the tires. The fix for this is a new sticker. This is not something to be very concerned about. If you happen to take your van into the dealer, just mention it, they'll fix the sticker. However, the other problem is much more serious in that there is supposed to be a bar in the door that will prevent somebody being able to hit you and have their car compromise the passenger space. It's just this big safety bar, and they forgot to put it in. They basically, at the factory, forgot to add this bar, and this makes the vehicles not certified for highway travel by the federal government. They're basically illegal vehicles now. So this got a lot of press, and people were like, oh my God. So I looked up the terms of the recall. It affected, get ready, 266 vans total. That's right. They missed this on apparently 266 total vans out of the tens of thousands that they make every year. So I would guess that you're probably fine with your ProMaster. But go ahead and take a look. I have an article from Auto Evolution linked in the show notes, and of course you can Google it. And it will come as no surprise, or at least little surprise, is that the market for RVs and camper vans and things like that is in a slump. After the COVID rush where everybody needed to have a camper van, things are really soft right now, which means it's a buyer's market. If you have come to some money because the stock market's been doing well or whatever, this might be a great time to buy a camper van because we do not know what the future holds. And right now, there's a lot of inventory and the prices are significantly down from where they were a few years ago. And my best advice is do not fall in love with a vehicle until you purchase it. Always be ready to walk away if the terms aren't what you'd like. Tech Talk. So if you have an older rig or you have a rig that's currently built out like an RV, like someone's added windows to it, well, over time, the seals on those windows get brittle and shrink. I've had this happen in my 73 Winnebago, it's happening in my 93 Scamp, and it hasn't happened in my Sprinter yet because it doesn't have those kind of windows. But you know what I'm talking about. These are the windows with the big, thick, black rubber seal that goes all the way around. And then over time, it shrinks. And you end up with this gap. There's a seam, and the seam gets bigger and bigger, and you might have a gap of an inch or so. Now, the correct, proper way to fix this is to get a new seal and completely remove the window, scrape out any kind of caulking or putty or whatever's there, replace it, re-add the seal, and put it back in. It's a lot of work, And it doesn't always work. I've seen a lot of videos where people have done this and then it leaks and it's frustrating. So I'm going to present you with a second way to deal with this problem. This is a hack, a kludge. It is not the official best way to do this, but if you have an older rig that's maybe not worth a lot of money, or you don't have a lot of time, or you just need a quick fix because you're actually out on the road and you have a leak to deal with right now, I can say that I've done this, it works, and it's not so bad. And that is to use Flex Paste. You've heard of Flex Seal, you've seen the ridiculous commercials. One of their products is called Flex Paste, and they make a black Flex Paste. It comes in these little pots. It's kind of expensive, but I have been using this to deal with the window seal issues on the Scamp and the Winnebago, and I can tell you it actually works pretty well. So let's just deal with the Scamp. On the Scamp, the problem is that the rubber has basically separated where the seams are, so I've got an inch there. I have simply taken the Flex Paste and filled in that gap using a popsicle stick to kind of round it. And then some places in the corners have come loose, and what I'll do is I'll put the seal back in as best as I can, and then any gap I fill in with the Flex Seal. Now, this is a little bit of an art. If you are really good at doing things like this, this is going to look like it came out of the factory. If you're sloppy, it's going to look like hell. But the important part is that it works. It really will prevent the leaks, and you don't have to remove the windows or anything like that. So again, this is a hack. It's a kludge, but for me, it's a lot more feasible than getting a new seal, tearing out the window, putting it all back in, and then maybe having it leak still. For me, I would rather fix the leak and not be so concerned about the cosmetics. Although I have to say that on the windows where I was very careful and did as neat a job as I could putting this stuff on, nobody would ever notice it. You'd just think it had window seals. You wouldn't even think twice about it. So I'll have a link in the show notes, but you can get this at any big box store. It's the Black Flex Paste, and it lasts for years. I can tell you that because I did it on the Winnebago a few years ago, and it's still working fine. Product review. So for the Scamp, it doesn't have a bathroom. Some of the 13-foot Scamps do. Mine doesn't. But it does have a little kind of a closet thing. It's not even a closet. It's a cabinet on the floor under a bench where you can fit a porta potty. Now, it's a very small closet. You have to put in a small porta potty. So I couldn't use the one that was in my van because that's kind of a big one, a normal seating size. I had to use a little tiny one. So I went on Amazon, like you do, and I'm looking at them all. And I decided to do an experiment, and I bought the absolute cheapest one I could find. And that was the Yeeta Home 2.6-gallon portable toilet for camping. Now, Yeeta Home is Y-I-T-A Home, not like Yeet, not like that. Y-I-T-A Home, maybe Yeeta Home, I don't know. They always name these things crazy, and I can't pronounce them. But this is a full-fledged cassette toilet, has all the stuff you'd think a cassette toilet would have. But it's only 2.6 gallons, which means it's shorter. This thing is squat. So when you sit on it, you are pretty much squatting, because rather than being the height of a normal toilet, it is way down there. But at $59.99, this is a $60 toilet, it's actually a pretty good deal, because the comparable one from Dometic, which is what I had in the NV200, is more than double that price. Now, this has the water reservoir on the top, the waste reservoir on the bottom, just like all cassette toilets. It has a bellows pump so that when you're done using it, you can rinse it out with the pump. And then it all goes into the tank, and you pick the tank up, and then you can dump it at any toilet or whatever. And honestly, it's all fine. I mean, this totally works fine. My only complaint about it is that it's very, very small. And I don't just mean short. I mean that if you are of some size, you might find this toilet uncomfortable because the basic seat is smaller than most. The seat on my Kori 5-gallon that I have in my van is much bigger and much more comfortable. I consider this an emergency-only product. If I were going to be using a toilet regularly, this isn't the one I would pick. However, it does fit nicely in this hole in the Scamp, and that's what I really needed. So if you are looking for an inexpensive, small, emergency-only cassette toilet, this Yeeta Home 2.6 gallon is just fine. Again, it's only $60, and I will have a link in the show notes. And of course, they have the same thing in the 5.3 gallon size, which is, you know, the normal height, and if honestly, it'd be a lot more comfortable. Same seat size, and it's only $77.39, so that's actually even a better value. Tales from the Road. So I stole a tractor once. Now, I was told to do this. It wasn't my idea. In fact, I didn't like it at all. But my boss said, hey, go steal that tractor. And I was in this dilemma. So I used to work for this company called Native Plants Incorporated. And we were doing genetic experiments on all kinds of different vegetables. But the place I worked most of the time was with tomatoes. And tomatoes are an interesting plant because the flowers are both male and female, but they mature at different times. Now, tomatoes will self-pollinate, meaning the pollen from the flower will also fertilize the flower, and you can get basically the plant is the mother and father, if you want to look at it that way. And that's how most tomatoes are that you would grow in your backyard, say. But we were doing hybrid tomatoes where the pollen had to come from one and had to go from the other. And the entire point of doing this was we were trying to make tomatoes have less water and more sugar in them. And why you would want this is if you were making tomato paste. Because the number one most expensive thing in producing tomato paste is electricity to dehydrate the tomatoes into paste. And if you have more sugar in the tomatoes originally, you can save a lot of money on electricity. And it's a funny industry, agriculture. You know, you don't think about electricity being one of the major expenses, but depending on what you're doing, it actually can be. So we had all these different varieties of tomatoes. We're crossing, you know, this plant with that plant and that plant with this plant and keeping track of the records. Now, this was a form of traditional plant breeding. This would not be considered GMO by today's standards. Although, GMO would have been a much better way to accomplish this because what we were doing is randomly throwing genes together, hoping for what we wanted. Whereas with GMO, we could have just said, that's the gene we want, and we could have put it in the plants and had what we want in one generation rather than 20. We had to grow these tomatoes to see how they were doing, and if we found a really good candidate, we had a farm out in Chico, California, and we would grow them out there. And of course, the proof of the pudding was, at the end of the season, we would test the tomatoes for their Brix, which is basically a measure of the soluble solids, which is a fancy way of saying how much sugar they had. And we had these little meters, and what you would do is collect the tomatoes and cut them and then squeeze them into a coffee filter and then take some of the drippings from the coffee filter and put them on this little scope that we held up to the sun. And then you could look through the scope and see a number and that would give you the Brix. And then we would write it down. It's very labor intensive. We had a number of migrant workers helping us who would gather the tomatoes and then we would actually do the quote unquote technical stuff, although anybody could have done it. After a few days of doing this, we had a massive pile of tomatoes. It was huge. And we didn't really know what to do with them. What do you do with this massive pile of tomatoes? So my boss noticed that the farmer next door had a tractor with a front end loader on it. And he basically said, we should go steal that. So how do you steal a tractor? Well, it turns out it's not very hard, even though there's a key to start the tractor, and most of those keys are the same. Like, you know, for years and years and years, there was a John Deere key. It was basically the same key for all John Deeres. You don't even need a key. In older tractors, all you needed was a screwdriver, and you didn't stick it in where the key went. You used the screwdriver to short across the solenoid where the starter was, and that would start the tractor right up. And we did this often. If ever we were out with our own tractors and forgot the keys, we would just start it with a screwdriver. And this worked. It was also incredibly dangerous because tractors aren't like cars. If it is in gear when you park it, and they usually are because you don't want them to roll away, and then you start it when it's in gear, well, it just starts right up and it will run you over. And that has killed a lot of people. So everything I'm saying is in the stupid things Jeff has done category, not, ooh, that's a cool hack category. Let's be clear about that. Anyway, so yeah, I do the screwdriver thing, and I get it to go. And then my boss is all excited about the front end loader, so he takes over. He wants to drive the front end loader. So I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. I own my own front-end loader now. The thrill is gone. But we will let the boss have fun with that. And he goes and he tries to figure out, you know, how the thing works, what's up and down, what's curl the bucket, how does that all work. And he does some tentative loads, but eventually, in time, we manage to clean up this entire pile of tomatoes, and we dump them in an abandoned field of kiwi fruit. Just a strange little fact, but we did. Anyway, as we're getting ready to put the tractor back, because we were only temporarily stealing it, the farmer who owns the tractor comes out and sees us, and he's not too happy. He says very rightly, well, you could have asked, which was sort of true, because, you know, obviously we could ask, but we didn't know where he was. This was before cell phones, didn't have a way to call him, and we had a time limit. It wasn't like we could have waited a day. But the guy's right. We stole his tractor. He would have been completely in his rights to call the police and say, hey, they stole my tractor. So my boss is doing the talking. He's like, oh, well, yeah, we're sorry. We didn't think you'd mind. And I'm just kind of sitting there cringing like this was a stupid idea from the beginning. But then the guy points out something, and this was a good lesson. He said, I would have let you borrow the tractor, but had you asked me, I would have told you about this. And it turns out this tractor had a kind of a radiator guard that filled up with chaff. As you were doing your stuff out in the field, this fan would, it was basically a filter, it would blow stuff in there. But if this got covered, the tractor would overheat. And we couldn't see the temperature gauge, because if you start it without the key, the temperature gauge doesn't work. So he came over with the key, turned the tractor on, and showed us that indeed we had overheated the tractor. Not terribly, it wasn't blowing steam, we didn't crack the head or anything like that. But had we kept going, we would have destroyed that tractor. And that's a good reason not to steal things, even temporarily. You might not know something that's important. Maybe it was almost out of fuel. Maybe it had a mechanical problem. I mean, we didn't know. We just, through hubris, just went over there and took this thing that we needed. And, you know, this was many years ago now, and I've always held that in mind, and that we did not have bad intentions. We knew that if we asked this guy, he would probably say okay. But we didn't go through the process, and sometimes you really need to, because bad things can happen if you just assume things. And, well, heck, we all know that. A place to visit. I have read about this place for years, and now that we have the internet, it's become popular again to speculate. And I've been to the pond, which is called Spot Pond in Stoneham, Massachusetts, but I have not been to the island, upon which there is an object, a stone, looks very much like a tombstone in a cemetery, that says on it, Where Chute Fell. Now, Chute is Shute, Where Chute Fell. And this is in a suburb of Boston, fairly normal place, nice pond with a nice island, lots of trees, and then just in the middle of it, this is basically a tombstone. And nobody knows what it means or what it's for. It was clearly carved a long time ago. They're really big letters, and they have serifs, which is the ornamentation part of fonts. It's harder to carve serifs, but at one point, people always carved serifs. But this has those. It's not something that was done recently. But what does it mean? Who was Chute, or what was Chute? Why did they fall? And why was that such a momentous thing that they had to put up this marker? Now, there's lots and lots of legends around this. And one of them is that there was a hotel on the island, which I find highly suspicious. And this was where some famous Colonel Chute had a duel and was shot and killed. And the problem with that theory is that famous colonels, or basically any colonel, has a record. And you can Google them, and we can't find a Colonel Chute that matches up with anybody who could have possibly been there. Another legend is that there was this local bare-knuckle boxer who used to box out there, and nobody could beat him, and then one day he was finally beaten by somebody, maybe a stonemason, and they wanted to commemorate it because they were doing these illegal fights out there, which actually does seem to have some possibility, because if you're doing illegal fights, you know, rowing out to an island would be a good place to do that. So that's a possibility. Anyway, I am of the opinion that if there are 20 different stories for something, that none of them are true. And I think that's probably the situation here. I think we just don't know. And I don't know that we're ever going to find out. One would normally go back in time as far as they could in the newspapers and find the first reference and kind of hold that as the true one. But in this case, the first reference of a stone that they think was there 100 years earlier. So we're kind of separated from it in history. Anyway, you can visit this. It's a little tricky. Spot Pond in Stoneham, Massachusetts is a reservoir, so it's restricted. You can't just bring any boat on there. You have to rent a boat, but they do rent canoes and kayaks, and you're allowed to take it, go out to the island, tie up, and then wander around on the island, and you can see where Chute fell. And then you'll have to see why you think Chute fell and why you think it's important. Because, heck, your opinion is probably as good as anyone else's on this one. Link in the show notes. Resource recommendation. So if you are looking for RV parts, and, you know, I keep saying RV parts because to me, what we're basically doing is making our own RVs here. And I know there's some disconnect between the RV community and the van life community, and I straddle both worlds. I get all that. But we're using a lot of the same parts, and anytime I find a good resource for parts, I want to share it with you guys. And this is a good resource. It's called factoryrvsurplus.com, just like it sounds. Factoryrvsurplus.com. And they have a little bit of everything. And if you're looking for windows or doors or anything like that, this would be a great place to look because they have a huge inventory and they seem to have pretty good prices. I have to say, you know, you can get a 12 by 18 window with a mounting ring for $104, and that comes with shipping. Or if you want that same thing where it opens and there's a screen in it, actually, it's bigger. It's 12 by 22. That's $130. These are not bad prices for windows. Or if you're gas struts, you need gas struts for your cabinets, they've got lots of them. They usually come in pairs for about $30. They sell all kinds of table bases and poles for the traditional kind of RV camper, or they have the folding leg kind. They sell water tanks and water pumps and on and on and on and on and on. So for what I'm finding that I like is that the shipping is included, which is great, and the prices are pretty good. They're certainly better than prices I've seen on Amazon. And heck, you should just add it into your arsenal. So that's factoryrvsurplus.com. Have a look. They've got all kinds of stuff there, and they might have that one thing you're looking for that you haven't been able to find anyplace else. And no, this was not sponsored. Well, folks, thank you very much for listening to episode 215. I'm going to be heading to New England soon, so I'm sure I'll be sharing some of that with you. But if you'd like to get a hold of me, you can always get me at jeff@builttogo.com. That's two T's, not three, not one. Music, as always, is by Simon Wagg. And until next time, let's remember the words of Haran Yahya, who said, I always wonder why birds choose to stay in the same place when they can fly anywhere on the earth. Then I ask myself the same question.